At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, we are back. Chris Mannix and Howard Beck, Crossover NBA Podcast. And Howard, on this episode, we are going to discuss what once seemed almost unthinkable. And that is the idea of trading LeBron James. The Lakers season, I don't know if that Pelicans loss was rock bottom. There's been a few kind of rock bottoms for the Lakers, but the level of effort, and that's how that game was decided, right? Like, that was not a talent gap necessarily between the Lakers and Pelicans. That was a team in New Orleans that played really hard and a team with the Lakers that a lot of times in that game looked like they were playing in quicksand, just not matching the effort and intensity of New Orleans. So let's call that the nadir of this Lakers season. So this one's out. And for me, you start looking at the future, and the future does not look very good for the Lakers. Russell Westbrook is under contract for next year. They'll have a lot of new pieces coming in and out, but you're talking about new minimum salary pieces. You know, guys with deep flaws in their game that are going to come in. So I'm not looking at this offseason and next season as being room to make any kind of seismic changes to what the Lakers are. On top of that, I mean, we're all kind of waiting for that LeBron James cliff, right? Like, he hasn't hit it or even come near it. But at some point when he goes into, what, his age 38 season next year, there's going to be a decline. And we've seen some signs of decline, albeit small ones from LeBron. But at some point it's going to come. So I look at the Lakers, and Bill Plaschke from the LA Times kind of got the rock rolling down the mountain on this last week, and Bill has been a influential Los Angeles columnist, as you know full well, as a former colleague of his out with the LA Times. He's been there for a long time, and his voice resonates in that area. So he kind of like got some momentum on this idea of trading LeBron, and I can't disagree. Like, there are layers to this you have to peel back, not the least of which is it makes no sense for the Lakers to outright tank because they don't have control of their draft picks for the foreseeable future. But they're not winning anything with this roster. And if you know that, and it feels like at this point the Lakers should know that, that every avenue should be explored, including trading LeBron.
Well, Chris, I'll say this. Plaschke, as you note, is absolutely influential and been writing in that market for a long time. And obviously, yeah, he and I go way back. I love Bill, a great, great person in addition to a phenomenal columnist. And one of the great things about the way he's always gone about covering LA sports, and particularly the Lakers, obviously, I did not pay as much attention in my days out there to the Dodgers and everything else, but he was always some combination of the voice of reason / voice of the fan, right? Bill felt it. So when he's coming to the table, he's not doing this just because it's a fun, hot take. Bill's writing that because he is, I think, kind of, you know, embracing, encompassing, channeling all of the angst among Laker fans and that whole region about where things are, and realizing that, yeah, like, this feels like a dead end. And what else can you do? So I'll start with this. The fact that it's a discussion at all, that Plaschke, as you say, got the ball rolling in some ways on this discussion, the fact that it is even a topic that we can reasonably discuss says a lot, right? Like, I don't agree with it. We'll get into that. I am adamantly opposed to the idea of them trading LeBron. But that it's a reasonable discussion, that it doesn't feel crazy, that it doesn't feel like a hot take, says something about where they are. It's a last resort, obviously. So you got to decide first if you're at the last resort stage. Have you tried other resorts? Have you gone to Cabo?
Stop down on there for a second, Howard. All like, right. Haven't they? Like, well, haven't they tried? Like, the only thing left to try is what they can try to do this summer. Now, this summer, Russell Westbrook will be as appealing as he possibly can be. He will be an expiring contract that some team out there will look at and say, look, maybe we can stomach, you know, 6 months of Russell Westbrook. Will be a bad team, but at the end of that 6 months, we'll get Russell's contract off our books. Yes. The Lakers also will have two first-round picks to dangle, the 2027 first and the 2029 first. Now, I think it's ludicrous to, you know, trade unprotected 2027 and 2029 picks. Like, this team, as we see it, like, they look like the Titanic right before it hit the iceberg. Like, they're steaming into it at full speed, not turning. So why you would deal potential lottery picks when you're in this type of situation is beyond me. But if the Lakers decide they're going to go the route of being all in on LeBron James, like, we're going to maximize the last year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is LeBron has left in Los Angeles or will play in Los Angeles, then yeah, you go and do that. But that, to me, is the quote last resort. If they don't make a deal this summer involving Westbrook and involving that draft capital, nada, nothing is going to change. And they risk going into next season with LeBron as a free agent, which is not a tenable situation in my mind.
All right, so before we get to the last resort, spend a little time with me here at Club Med on the not quite last resort. One, the Lakers are always been about stars, right? So, like, they do everything possible to get them. They don't generally trade them, right? You know, Jerry West retired a Laker. Wilt Chamberlain retired a Laker. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar retired a Laker. Kobe Bryant retired a Laker. They did trade Shaq, but that was because they had Kobe, and there was a little bit of an issue there, as people may recall. Like, this is not a team that's generally going to just, like, throw up its hands and say we're screwed and trade one of the greatest players in NBA history. So before we get to the trade LeBron stage, and there's nothing they could do right now anyway, right? Like, we got to wait till the season's over. As you point out, they'll have another draft pick in play once they get to or through this coming draft. It'll give them one more piece to play with. Russ will be on an expiring $47 million contract. Like, just trading that, this, the math gymnastics alone are going to be astounding to pull it off, because it may not be one team. It may require three teams, four teams, five teams, whatever, to figure out how to do this and to find the right home for him and to make it work for cap reasons. Although it's always easier in the offseason, right? When teams are under the cap, it's a lot easier to make deals. And that opportunity comes in July. So there's the trade Russ option. There's the use the future picks option, which, yes, scary as hell, because you've already given up a ton of picks, mostly in the Anthony Davis deal in the first place, picks and pick swaps. But I will go back to a premise that I've always used in these situations. And I said it when LeBron was with Cleveland, and they were refusing to trade what they thought was this golden ticket pick from the Nets, that the Nets ruined by overachieving, and it became the eighth pick, which became Colin Sexton. Fine player, but not worth holding on to at the expense of getting LeBron help. They should have gotten LeBron help. They should have traded that pick. And if you can trade future picks to give LeBron James and your franchise a chance to win another title or two in the next few years before LeBron retires, then you do it. It's about, when you have a player of his caliber, it's always about the present. You cannot worry about the future. You worry about it when you get there. And so I'm not worried about those picks. If I can get rid of if I can trade Westbrook's contract and get something of value back, multiple pieces, the reverse of what they did when they got him, then that's an option. I don't expect much else on their roster is going to fetch much. But listen, if we're talking about trading a star, I'm going to trade Anthony Davis. I know he's younger. I know he was supposed to be not only LeBron's running mate, but also the bridge to the next era after LeBron retires. I know that's not the route you want to go, but he's also their most valuable piece not named LeBron. If I could somehow unjam the cap, recoup talent and depth, give myself other avenues to pursue, I'm going to consider trading Anthony Davis before I trade LeBron James. Not least of which among those reasons is that, like, I don't know that Anthony Davis can be the bridge anyway. I don't know that he can carry a team by himself. There's more evidence that he can't than he can, and he gets hurt all the time. So these are all measures I would want to take before I trade LeBron. So I'm not convinced of it. And I want to see, like, this front office has not been particularly creative in not just now, but for years running. I would like to, like, I don't know if they just need to bring on a different cap guru, somebody else with a different philosophy, but as impossible as this looks, we have seen teams pull out of worse. We have seen teams figure it out. Try to figure it out first before just, like, hitting the nuclear button and trading LeBron. That said, I did play around for about 20 minutes this morning on possible LeBron trades, not using the machine, but I did kick around a bunch of thoughts of which we can get to.
Well, on LeBron trades, the obvious one to point to right away is Cleveland. And
not on my list even.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean, they're the most obvious to me because LeBron, I think, would embrace a return there given the state of the Cavs right now. And if you're Cleveland, I wouldn't consider, I'd tell the Lakers, don't mention the names Evan Mobley, Darius Garland, maybe not even Jared Allen, though that's probably more.
And if I'm the Lakers, I'm hanging up then.
Yeah, it's fine. Hang up the phone. Good. If you're the Cavs, you can't consider that.
But is it Sexton and Markkanen? If you're you can't trade LeBron James for Sexton and Markkanen and some picks.
Well, it's Sexton, it's Markkanen, it's picks. That's the side. But now, the team that most interests me, though, is the Denver Nuggets. I remember when LeBron was a free agent back in 2018. And, the Nuggets, their officials were telling me, we want to make a run at him. We just want a meeting with Rich Paul, with LeBron. We don't care what kind of contract he's looking for. 1-year deal, 5-year deal, whatever he wants to do, we want in on that. And I look at the Nuggets right now as being a team that could be a potential trading partner. Now, Michael Porter Jr. is a scary player because of the back issues that he's had, but at his best, and we've seen him at different times the last couple of years show real potential to be an elite scorer in this league. At his best, he's probably better than anything the Lakers could get back in a trade, at least as far as centerpiece players go. He's in his early 20s, and as long as he's healthy, he has the potential to be an elite scorer in the NBA. So, could the Nuggets get the Lakers' interest in a package headlined centered around Michael Porter Jr., who all of a sudden, on his new contract, is going to make a heck of a lot of money. So he becomes somewhat tradable, not dollar for dollar with LeBron, but you don't have to scrounge around looking for the money to make the salary cap fit. That to me, Denver is and will continue to be a wild card team for LeBron James because Tim Conley, the general manager, believes in taking big swings. And the Nuggets, with Nikola Jokic, with Jamal Murray, you add LeBron to that mix, are they the favorites in the West? Probably. You've got an MVP, an all-star, and whatever LeBron is at that point. Probably somewhere in between of those two things. That's a team to watch if the Lakers get real interested in trading LeBron.
So let me just stipulate again before we dive into this discussion. I'm against trading LeBron
James. I know you are.
I'm just making sure the listeners
understand. On record.
However, the Nuggets were on the list of teams that I thought would be intriguing for this reason. I think you have to have two elements with a potential trade partner if there's going to be a LeBron James trade. You got to be sending him to a team that clearly has a chance to contend. That's either already a contender or LeBron's addition makes them a contender, right? I think everybody can agree on that. You're not sending him to the Knicks, let's say. You're sending him somewhere where he's going to succeed and where he wants to be and where he's got a chance to add rings.
You're going to do
right by LeBron. There's one team I take off the list immediately. I'm not sending him to the Clippers. That's catastrophic if you're the Lakers, but I'd send him just about anywhere else that I could get the right return, which is the second piece. So one, a team that has title chances or where with LeBron, and two, a team that can trade quality players, probably younger players and picks, but still be good enough. So you name the Nuggets, and that's the case with them, right? Like, LeBron and Jokic alone is a contender. Throw anybody around them, and I think you're, especially shooters, you're going to be in good shape. I would even consider a combination of, and again, like the I know the cap math. I did not do any trade machine stuff here, folks. So, like, do not hang me on the math doesn't work stuff. I haven't even looked into that. Plus, in the summer, it's going to be different numbers anyway. I would even do Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. for LeBron, because LeBron and Jokic is enough.
No.
I would. They're both injury risks. They're both coming off of serious injuries.
But like, Howard,
And if you're Lakers, you have to get enough back to be viable.
Oh, well, yeah, you hope to, but you know, if you're the Nuggets or the Cavaliers, because we throw them into the mix too with that whole Mobley Garland untouchable in my mind stuff, like, don't you feel you're in a position of power or have some leverage here? Like, LeBron's got 1 year left in his contract. Like, the Lakers, there's only a finite number of teams they are going to deal him to, as you said. Like, why would you consider giving up, what is Jamal Murray, like 26, 27? You know,
something
Jamal
like that,
Murray.
Yeah. I think 27.
Or 22, 23, Darius Garland or Evan Mobley, who's even younger than that. Like, why do you even think about it? Like,
because if you're a team, well, if you're the Cavaliers.
I don't even think Jokic and LeBron, like, I'm not even sure that wins.
If,
like,
you're the Cavaliers,
it's good, yeah. But it's the best passing front court maybe I've ever seen. But like, I don't know that it wins at the highest level. I think you say to them, like, look, Michael Porter Jr. is great. We'll give you a bunch of draft picks, whatever else you want off our roster. Got some decent young players that are still camped out there. I'd do that. But if they start saying Jamal Murray, same thing I would do if I was Cleveland. Hang on.
Jamal Murray's never even made an all-star team, Chris.
Okay, but he's all-star-esque.
All right, No. He's a very good player who's coming off of an ACL and who's never made an all-star team.
Like, yeah, those ACL injuries aren't what they used to be, though. Like,
he's not some untouchable, is all I'm saying.
He should be, but at 27, like, how old is Jokic? Jokic is like 27, right? Like, Jokic looks like he's 40, but he's
26, I think.
26, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I'd hang my hat, too. If I'm the Nuggets, like, I'm okay with. Like, I still think I can win with a healthy Porter, a healthy Murray, a healthy Jokic. I mean, look at the first half of the season when, you know, Murray and Porter were down. Nuggets were playing great. That's because Jokic was out of his mind. Like, he kept them in the middle of the playoff field in the Western Conference almost by himself. So, like, getting those two guys back, I'd feel pretty confident that I've got a better than puncher's chance to win.
Oh, no. I love the idea of LeBron with the Nuggets. It is a question of what you're sending back. And I do think LeBron and Jokic plus almost anything around them becomes a viable contender as long as LeBron's playing at the level he's playing at. And to the point of, like, oh, he's an expiring, he's 1 year left. If he likes it there, maybe he extends. Besides that, what did we learn? What was the lesson of Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors? 1 year for a championship is damn well worth it. And the Nuggets have never won one.
Yeah, but
the Cavaliers
have won
one.
Aren't the Nuggets a little bit different? Like, you know this. The Raptors had topped out. Like, they knew what they were. Like, with DeMar DeRozan, we are a second-round playoff team. Maybe we get to the conference finals, but we're not winning a championship. I don't look at the Nuggets as being a team that's topped out. Like,
there's
they
no
still
guarantee
have a
they're
high
ever
ceiling.
They got no guarantee
they have a high ceiling.
Get either.
They have a higher ceiling than the Raptors
did. A lot of teams have high ceilings. The Sacramento Kings had a high ceiling back in the Chris Webber era.
Okay, all right. Well, they played it out. Like, I don't think this Nuggets team has played it out yet. Like, I'd like to see them over 2 years at full strength and see what they got.
But listen, for the last couple of years, I've thought they were this great dark horse contender, and every year something happens. Somebody gets hurt. And that's the reality of the NBA, is that you can have all the promising youth in the world, but nothing is guaranteed, and if you've got a shot at a LeBron James, like, you do what it takes to get him. All right, so that's we agree on the possible destination. Can I throw a couple others at you?
Yep, do it.
How about the aforementioned Toronto Raptors? They got all these interesting young pieces. We know that Masai Ujiri is not afraid of rolling the dice on a guy who might only be around for a year. I think LeBron and Masai actually would get along great. I think LeBron and that city would get along great. And they've got so many pieces. Like, you could trade, and again, folks, I'm just spitballing here. Do not freak out. You could trade Siakam and Ananobi, and maybe that's too much, and you'd still have LeBron.
What are you left with there? Like,
LeBron, Fred VanVleet, and Scotty Barnes, and a bunch of other decent pieces. Like, it's not the level of LeBron and Jokic, but they have so many pieces. I mean, maybe it's Siakam and picks. Maybe it's, you know, but like, the Lakers have to get back promising youth. And Siakam's actually, you know, not any that young anymore, right? He's like 27. But the Raptors have so many good young pieces that you could do multiple players and still have enough left there. So that's another intriguing one, I think. The Hawks.
That'd be a no for me. I'm just going to weigh in as you go. That's a no for me on the if I'm the Raptors. I don't do
period.
Siakam and Scottie Barnes.
Do you do anything?
Scottie Barnes.
I was saying Siakam and Anunoby. I'm keeping.
I don't do. I'd probably just do like Anunoby and Scottie Barnes, maybe. Like,
right,
I
but you like
win.
The destination.
Like, Like it's. Yeah, I mean, no. I think you're right. I think LeBron and Masai would click instantly. But like, giving up that many pieces for, like, you kind of knew a healthy Kawhi Leonard going to that team, they were going to be really good. Were they going to be a championship level good? Unclear at that point when they made the trade, but you knew they were going to be really good. Like, I don't know what Fred VanVleet and LeBron and Scottie Barnes are in the Eastern Conference. Version of LeBron anyway.
Yeah, they probably need another piece or two, but when you get LeBron, you accelerate everything, and now you're going and finding more veterans, and there's other guys who will want to jump on board.
That didn't really work out for the Lakers this past offseason.
Well, it worked when they won a championship 17 months ago. The Hawks are interesting. Again, a team with a lot of pieces. You could put LeBron and Trey together. You probably end up trading Collins and maybe Herter with him. It's interesting. It's just an interesting possibility. the craziest one in all of this. Could you send him to the Sixers to play with Harden and Embiid? I mean, I know there's too many guys who are going to want to have the ball in their hands. We were already experiencing this with the Lakers team, but like Daryl absolutely would do it. Could you get Maxi and Thybulle out of it? And then they offload Tobias Harris and give Daryl more flexibility in his payroll. I don't know. Again, folks, I'm just spitballing. I'm not making serious trade proposals here. Don't freak out. I'm just saying it's interesting. It's a fun thought.
It is interesting. I think you'd want more, and you'd want picks, and the Sixers gave up a bunch of them or a couple of them.
Well, if you got Maxi and Thybulle, which the Sixers probably don't do, but like if you got them both.
You know Daryl would do that.
He'll throw anybody overboard.
because even Daryl knows, and we're going to get to James Harden in a minute, but like you got like a 2 or 3 year window here with Harden and Embiid. Like that's it. So you can probably count on LeBron to be good for 2 or 3 years. But you'd also like anyone that acquires LeBron is going to have to know he wants to be there, right? Like you're not going to do all this to get a guy for 6 months.
No,
like,
which is why they have to be a contender.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back to the Heat. Send them Hero and like I'd be asking for Adebayo, which they probably are not giving up. I don't know. Hero, Duncan Robinson, and some picks. I don't know what else you could throw in there. I would want Hero and Adebayo if I were the Lakers. But LeBron plus Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry could be scary.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of good options out there for him. The question, like, it goes back to the singular question of like, you know, the Lakers. You're right. They need to get value back in return. If for no other reason, any losing only benefits the teams that have their picks, whether it's the Pelicans or swap rights with the Pelicans, or you know, David Griffin's kind of got to be sitting back watching this and just kind of laughing as it goes along. You've got to get value back. I just don't like where you and I seem to disagree, and there seems to be a bridge between. Like, you look at the Cavs saying Evan Mobley could be in the mix. I look at saying hell no. I'd say it's just Colin Sexton. Same thing with the Nuggets. Jamal Murray. Hell no. It's just Michael Porter Jr. Same thing with, you know, a team like Miami. You want to take Tyler Hero? Okay, I can stomach that, but you ain't getting your hands on Bam Adebayo.
And if I'm the Lakers, I'm saying, listen, you want a shot at winning a championship that most of these franchises we're talking about have never won or haven't in a very long time? You got LeBron James puts you there. So yes, I'm going to want your best young player if I can get him or some combination thereof. I got a couple more.
All right.
What about your Boston Celtics, Chris Mannix,
ooh,
in a deal involving Jaylen Brown and maybe Robert Williams? And then you get LeBron and Tatum together. Now, there's two teams the Lakers are not trading him to, the Clippers and the Celtics, for obvious reasons of regional rivalry and historic rivalry. But just
that's
for the
probably,
sake of
that's probably the best, you know, Jaylen Brown and Robert Williams combined is probably the best talent offer the Lakers could hope to get at that point. Jaylen Brown didn't make the All-Star team this year. A lot to do with early season struggles, injuries, but he's playing like one right now. And Rob Williams, if not for the depth of talent at center, specifically with Jokic, Embiid, and Gobert, Rob Williams in that next class. Like, he's like all NBA ish level. Like, he's right there on the cusp of it. A very good shot blocker and a fast improving offensive player. So, and young, still like what, in his mid 20s. So, yeah, those are two. That's a package. If I were the Lakers, if the name wasn't Boston attached to it, I'd probably consider it. But I think you're right. I don't think they'll be doing a.
All right. So, last one.
I'm not so sure LeBron would want to go to the Celtics either. I don't know.
It's it feels weird, right? Like, yeah.
Shaq was in a Celtics uniform at the end.
Yeah. I mean, anything's possible. It's possible, as KG once said, I believe. Mm-hmm. Last one here. How about the Bulls? We saw him embrace Michael at the 75th anniversary celebration. Like, how about a different kind of full circle? He grew up idolizing Michael, wore his number, sent him to the Bulls. Zach LaVine comes back in a sign-in trade because he's a free agent. Maybe Patrick Williams is in there too. And then LeBron joins DeRozan and Vooch and the rest.
I mean, it pushes them to that next level. LaVine would be a killer for that team because he's been such a big part of what they do. But DeRozan, Vucevic, some of the other guys there.
You do what you got to win a title again, right? It's been a long time since Michael hit that shot.
I think teams, like, if the Lakers even consider it, and as we're talking about this, we should once again acknowledge there's no indication the Lakers are considering making the deal. But
and they
like,
should
what
not.
What happens if LeBron turns down the extension? Then, like, next year, Howard, if he turns down the extension, it's all about where he's going to play next. Like, all about it. Wherever he goes, it'll be like pre-summer of 2010, where every stop LeBron made along the potential destination road, he was asked about where he's going to play. So that would be a disaster. The Lakers have to get his name on an extension this offseason, or the next season could be over even before it starts. All right, let's turn for a minute to James Harden, who made his debut with the 76ers over the weekend, played brilliantly in these two games, averaged 28 points in two games, shot 57% from the floor, shot 57% from three, handed out 14 assists per game over these next two. Granted, it was against the Timberwolves and the woebegone New York Knicks, but it was impressive. So I want to go first here, though, Howard, because I'm not surprised, right? Like, I've been saying every time we talk about this or I write about this, that the next 3 months or 4 months, or however long it goes for James Harden this season, are going to be great for Philadelphia. Why? Because you have a motivated James Harden out there on the floor. He's motivated by people criticizing him for how it ended in Brooklyn. He's motivated about being a good teammate, someone that can find a way to mesh his talent with Joel Embiid, to mesh his skill set with Tyrese Maxey, to be a leader out there on the floor. The next few months are going to be the very best of James Harden. And on top of it all, if he does all those things, there's a pot of gold at the end of that proverbial rainbow. There is a equivalent of a 5-year contract or a 4-year extension, whatever it's going to be, for more than a quarter of $1 billion waiting for him. So I expect James Harden to be the A++ version of himself over these final few months of the season. What's always worried me is what happens when James Harden gets that bag. What happens next year when you get into the dog days of January and February and Joel Embiid is putting his hand up for a post pass and James Harden dribbles the ball 18 seconds on the perimeter? What happens when Joel Embiid, who is not known for keeping things to himself, either on the floor with his body language or afterwards in post-game interviews, says something that irritates James Harden? We have seen James Harden effectively detonate two franchises in the last 14 months. Houston, I think he was on sturdier ground there to do that because he'd been there a long time and that team was clearly on the decline. Brooklyn, though, it's all bed of roses that first year or first half year, however long he played there. And then when the going got tough, James Harden literally got going. Said, you know what? I'm not doing this. I'm not feeling this. And forced his way to the Philadelphia 76ers. So I wouldn't be scared at all about the rest of this season. I think he's going to be great. I think next year, if you give him that $250 million contract, you should be worried week by week about what happens when things get a little bit rough.
Well, maybe things won't get rough. I mean, I think that's the gamble here is that yes, when things go sideways, James Harden checks out. We've seen it happen enough times to know that that's a risk. And we should not base too much on these first two games. As you note, not exactly the highest caliber of competition. They've got some tougher games coming up, and we'll see how that goes. But things could not have gone better in the first two games of the James Harden, Joel Embiid era of the Philadelphia 76ers. Could not have gone better. Both guys thrived. They looked great. They played great. They won. And then there's this. Like, how about... I'm gonna read these composite numbers from the last two games. 24.5 points per game, 4.5 rebounds per game on a shooting percentage, field goal percentage of 667. That's not Embiid and that's not Harden. That's Tyrese Maxey, the guy who, if you were a critic of this trade or concern trolling the trade, it was Maxey's had this breakthrough year. How's he going to function when all of a sudden the ball is not in his hands and he doesn't have control? Tyrese Maxey is like kicking serious ass and like 12 for 16 one game, 8 for 14 from the field the next. And that was a legitimate basketball analysis concern, right? How's this going to impact this really good young player who's emerging? I mean, he's been fantastic, even better than he was before. So I really, like, things could not be going better. So you're right, Chris. Like, as long as things are good, and in the near term, while they're, you know, trying to pull this together for a championship run in the near term, everybody's going to be on their best behavior. I think it's legitimate to wonder what happens down the road if Embiid and Harden are not on the same page, or if there's a game or a series of games where somebody is doing a little too much and they get side. But Harden's also at a point in his career where, and look, I believe, like, not everybody, not every superstar wants to win at the highest level as badly as the others. Some do a little bit, some do a lot, some that's all they ever think about. I don't think James Harden's one of these guys who's going to be satisfied just to, like, hang it up one day being a top five all-time scorer and having made, you know, a ridiculous amount of money. I do think he wants to win at the highest level. I do think he wants to validate the fact that he's not just a great scorer, but a great player. And you need to win at a higher level to move from one column to the next in the public consciousness. So I think he will do his best to make the partnership work. I think Embiid absolutely sees himself as somebody who could be an all-time great, but needs to win at the highest level to do so, or to validate it or confirm it. So I think it can, and I still go back to, I know it was the smallest of sample sizes, but when Harden and Durant and Kyrie Irving were together last season, they looked great together, and Harden gave up the ball a lot. He was more than willing to keep the ball moving as long as they were winning and those guys were in a great rhythm. So I'm weirdly as somebody who's been critical of Harden at various stages, like, I'm weirdly optimistic about this partnership. Like, I think it's going to work.
Yeah, but didn't you just kind of made my point for me, though? Like, you know, last year, his first year with Brooklyn, things did get tough, obviously, with injury issues to some of the guys, including himself. But he was so desperate to erase the stink of what happened at the end in Houston that he did all the right things, that he did morph his game into more of a playmaker mode, that he did embrace a role opposite Kyrie Irving, that he did kind of try to carry this team when he needed to and be the facilitator when he didn't. And he did it for, you know, the entirety of the season. And then next year, things got a little bit tough. And let's you know, putting aside the Kyrie stuff, which obviously is a discussion unto itself, like, Kevin Durant didn't, like, tear his Achilles. Like, he had a knee injury. It's going to get him back onto the floor any moment now. So, like, I think when, you know, when things get a little bit rough, it just seems like James Harden turns. And again, I don't think it happens this year. But next year, armed with the security of a five-year contract, if things aren't going his way, I'd be concerned about it. I would if I was Philadelphia. You still do it, but it's just there. So
it's always there. You're right. And I don't dismiss that at all. But as of right now, I'm bullish on what they've got and the potential there.
You're a very positive guy, Howard. We always acknowledge that about you. All right, let's finish quickly on the Knicks, and it's bad right now. Five losses in a row for New York, 9 of the last 10. They go into the All-Star break with truly horrifying losses, first to Oklahoma City and then to some version of Brooklyn, the latter of which came after they blew, what, a 20-something point lead to Cam Thomas and the Nets. They come out of the All-Star break, lose to Miami, and they get smoked by the aforementioned 76ers. Howard, I'm mystified by how bad this Knicks team is. Evan Fournier made some comments after the game the other night where he said, we just don't have confidence in our decision-making in the fourth quarter. Like he said, it's like it should be go, 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 make your move. And he said the confidence just isn't there. I don't know how we got there. It's probably a combination of things. Julius Randle taking, I don't even want to call it a step back anymore, just like a leap backwards this season. The acquisitions of, you know, Kemba Walker, obviously, and Fournier not working out the way the Knicks hoped they would. Injuries to Derrick Rose throughout the year have certainly taken a reliable player away from Tom Thibodeau. And Thibodeau has not covered himself in glory this season either with how he's coached this team. They're very simplistic offensively. They are. They're still, you know, Tibbs is still a great defensive coach, but, you know, I think this season has exposed him a little bit weaker on the offensive side of the ball. I don't know what the fix is here. I have a hard time, Howard, coming up with an outcome here that doesn't end with Thibodeau losing his job. Like, whatever's going on with the Cam Reddish stuff where Tibbs didn't seem to want him, that he was playing him, and, you know, I think that might turn out to be the final nail in the coffin between old friends Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau. Like, I just, the way the season's played out, I'm not basing this on anything I'm hearing internally from New York, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Tibbs is 2 years and done with the Knicks.
Real quick, they're 17th in defensive efficiency and 25th in offensive efficiency. And obviously neither of those things is going to get you anywhere in this league. But just to quickly address the defense thing, like, Tibbs' teams in Minnesota were bottom third defensively for most of his time there. And the Knicks are middle of the pack this year. So they had one good season. This happens. This happens. And not just to Tibbs, but I just, you know, like I've always said, great defense in this league is never predicated just on having a great defensive-minded coach or a guy who demands defense. All these things we attribute to Tibbs, he's done those things. It works when you have players who buy in and who are good at it. It doesn't work when you don't. It's always more about personnel than it is about scheme. No one's just a great defensive coach if they don't have... Shit, Frank Vogel was a great defensive coach in LA for a couple of years. Suddenly he's not. It's always more about your personnel and about how those things mesh. So look, you know this because we talked about it when Tibbs was hired. We've talked about it many times since. I did not think Tom Thibodeau was the right choice at the time. Not for any knock on his coaching acumen, but because they were not a team that was ready to win now, and he's a win now coach. And lo and behold, they did win now. And overachieved beyond their own expectations, beyond certainly mine, beyond everybody's. And it was a great ride, but I said at the time, I'm not sure how sustainable this actually is. We'll see. Turns out it wasn't. Turns out Julius Randle isn't an All-NBA second team player after all. He was for one season. He probably never will be again. So I always thought the better way to go was to recognize, and this is the thing, like, what should we do about the Knicks was the question you had in our notes about today's episode. I would start with this. And I put this in all caps in my own notes. Recognize where you are for once. Because the time that they hired Tibbs, they were a team that should have been kind of rebuilding. And instead they were like, no, we're going to win now. We're going to get Tibbs. We're going to win now. And they did. But it crashed and burned so quickly, proving my point. They weren't ready for that. And they're not ready for it right now either. So recognize where you are. You're a team that kind of needs a rebuild. And you needed it before, and you still need it now, despite last season. You're not a move or two away. So blow it up. Trade Randle if somebody can give you value for him. Trade Derrick Rose because he could be more a better contributor on a team that is a playoff team or a high playoff team. He's still got something left as a sixth man. I don't know if you could trade Kemba Walker, who they've shut down, certainly not helping his trade value. Trade Fournier if you can. Invest in the youth because they have some interesting young players. I don't know if any of these guys are going to be all-stars. RJ Barrett, you know, has shown signs, but like it's mostly about the rest of them, right? Like give the minutes to Toppin and Quickly and McBride and Reddish and Grimes once he gets healthy. Like see what you've got. But they've always been afraid to do this, Chris. Every front office that goes through there, every coach that goes through there for 20 years, they're afraid to face reality at moments like this and say, you know what? We got to take two steps back to move forward. And they clearly don't have the right personnel, and they you know, turned last season into this magical run, and all credit to them for it. But when it crashes this quickly, you have to admit it wasn't sustainable in the first place, and that you don't have enough of the fundamentals in place to just patch it up and get back there, right? They're not a move or two away from making it to the run at the fourth seed. And by the way, go get a point guard, for God's sake. Like, this has been something they've needed for like 20 years.
Decades.
It's like...
Mark Jackson the last like viable true point guard in New York? I mean, due respect to Chris Childs and some of the other guys that rolled, Charlie Ward, who came through there. Like,
three weeks of Lynn Sanity. A couple months of Raymond Felton playing like a near all-star when he first arrived with Amari Stoudemire. Like, there's moments, but no, they've never had a guy that you could say, like, this is our point guard for the next 5 years, and he's a true floor leader. When you read that quote from Fournier talking about, like, we're not organized, or we don't have a plan, or whatever.
Point guard.
And I said it when they had the opportunity at the time that they should have gone out and paid Fred VanVleet no matter what it would have cost. I would have overpaid him. I would have maxed him out. Yep. But like, go get somebody. I'm not even sure. Like, I haven't looked at I don't think they're going to have cap room this summer anyway, but whatever you do, whatever moves you make, start there. Cause it ain't Kemba Walker and it ain't Derrick Rose. I don't know who it is. It's not Emmanuel Quickley either. Like, he's a nice young player, but this is not the guy who's going to run your team for the next 5 to 10 years. There's a lot of work to do. I don't know what they do with Tibbs. I hate speculating on, you know, coaches or GMs, career security and all that stuff, job security. But like, whatever they do, that's it. Recognize where you are, that you're really a rebuild and not a team that's a move or two away, and start with getting a decent point guard and build from there.
Hey, look, the only reason I bring up Tibbs's job security there is that it's pretty clear there's a disconnect between the front office and the coaching staff.
And like, there absolutely is.
It's abundantly clear from watching, from talking to people behind the scenes. Like, that's clear. That's going on there. Now, we don't know anything because Leon Rose speaks to nobody, which is incredible. Like, you are the GM of the New York Knicks, and you say nothing to
in
nobody.
In 2 years.
You don't hold press conferences. Like, are you that afraid of getting grilled by Frank Isola? Like, is that really what
Frank's not even on the beat anymore.
I'm just saying. Fine, Mark Berman. Like, you're that afraid of being asked a pointed question.
I think he's afraid of Fred Katz. Fred Katz is really intimidating.
Fred's lethal out there with the pen. I was going to bring up LeBron's Bill Oram comments, which were
No, let's not go there.
Like, I'm not going. That was incredible, like, to see LeBron go after our buddy Bill.
I think he was kidding, by the way. But
yeah. It's unclear. And I also wasn't sure if he was confusing Oram with Plaschke there for a sec, because Plaschke was obviously the one that went after him in that moment. So anyway, probably not. He probably knew who the beat writers were there. But, like, no accountability. Meanwhile, you see Sean Marks holding, like, press gaggles, like, you know, every couple of months. If you really want to get a hold of Sean Marks, you can for stuff. Like, he will get back to you. And I guess it's easier if you're on the team that has Kevin Durant or whatever. But Sean Marks has always been that way. When they were rebuilding, he was as well.
It's a really bad look. It's typical of the Garden. I don't know how much of that is the Garden in this case and how much is Leon, because he was kind of a private guy even during his years as an agent. But look, Steve Mills hardly ever talked. Phil Jackson initially did, but then his last year, I don't think talked at all. Like, this is the Garden's way. Like, they don't want their
when
people out there.
Donnie did, and I thought that was one of the best years the Knicks
glass-nosed.
Had.
Glasnost. I called it glasnost. Like, that was... That was the only time Donnie Walsh talked every day, because Donnie Walsh said, this is how I do things.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a reason Donnie Walsh then had to resign 2.5 years into his tenure there, because he couldn't take it anymore.
But it always, I felt living in New York at that time, and you were on the beat, but I felt like kind of living there and reading the coverage consistently that was one of the better eras for the Knicks in terms of how they were covered. Like, when you had some accountability there, like, you weren't going to get everything, but Donnie answered your questions, and like, he, When something was wrong, like, you would admit to it, and then you kind of move on. Here's what we're doing and try to fix it. Like, he just sat there. Like, I mean, God, back then, I'm just like a 20-something reporter over at SI, and Donnie's just sitting there courtside. If you want to walk up to him and have a 10-minute conversation about something, nobody was stopping you back then. And it just worked. And why they continued to, like, run away from that, you know, that approach is beyond me. But I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to dig into the Knicks in the future, Howard, because... it's going to be an interesting offseason, I think, in New York, one way or the other. Good stuff, as always, man. We will do this again next week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.